This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Coming up, our behind-closed-doors conversation about whether our efforts to teach kids to be cautious about men have gone too far. One writer and dad thinks they have. But first, funeral services are being held in Miami today for Sean Taylor. The Washington Redskins player was shot last week during what police believe was a burglary attempt on his home near Miami. He died the next day. Yesterday, the NFL held a moment of silence in Taylor's honor before each game. Taylor's death and his life have been the subject of intense media coverage over the past week, some of it heated and controversial. Joining me now are two sports writers who have written about Taylor. David Aldrich is a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He says Taylor's death is a wake-up call to black men. Omar Kelly is a sports writer at the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. He covered Taylor during his days at the University of Miami, and he says that the player was misunderstood. He joins us from NPR's Miami Bureau. Welcome to you both. Thanks for speaking with us.
Nice to be here.
Nice to be here.
David, and thank you for coming in. I've been struck by how this event has just devastated people. Now, of course, you know, we're here in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and people were crying literally on the metro when they heard the news of his death. But this incident seems to have just reverberated, particularly among African-American men. And I just wonder why you think this has hit so hard.
I think it's probably a combination of a couple of things, Michelle. It's an athlete dying young in a city that reveres its football team. He was the best player on the football team, and no one disputed that. The coaches, the players, everyone agreed that he was the best player on the team. And he was a black male, a young black male. And I think all of those things kind of combine, you know, not just in Washington but in other places, to kind of create this sense of real loss and sorrow, even though most people, including most journalists, didn't really know Sean Taylor at all because he didn't talk to the media a great deal. But nonetheless, you felt like you knew him. You felt like he was a part of your extended family, and it hurts.
Omar, what do you think? And you wrote about the fact that most people didn't really know him. Why do you think that this death has hurt so badly?
I think the curiosity about who Sean Taylor was, you know, I'm really shocked about the outpour of support now he's received. When the initial news of him being shot came out, you know, there was a great outcry from the public and even the media about how, well, you know, this guy led a dangerous life. He called it upon himself. And I think when you know, as time went on and people got to look at the facts of the case, they realized, hey, okay, he was an athlete, which made him a target. That's possibly why he was robbed and murdered. And since then, I think there's been a great deal of remorse and sorrow about, you know, the loss of this individual. He was indeed a star. He was indeed loved by the University of Miami and all of Miami and Washington. And a lot of people are mourning for his loss because he was, you know, everybody felt that they knew him when in fact, probably no one outside of his family really had a real grasp of who he was.
I saw in the coverage of this, you know, terrible story, a racial divide, at least initially, where some of the white sports writers were talking about, look, as Omar pointed out, you know, the guy had a troubled life. He pleaded guilty to assault charges. He was arrested for DUI. I saw a number of the African-American sports writers saying, don't judge him. Don't judge him. Don't judge him prematurely. In fact, David, you wrote in your piece, as black men, we cannot allow ourselves to be defined by anyone, by the media or by ourselves, and accept the premise that one beginning means only one possible ending. What do you think that's about? What are you saying?
Well, I think it's very easy for the media, and this is white and black, because black writers wrote the same thing. A lot of black writers wrote the same thing. He had it coming, basically, was what they said. Was that, you know, when we see someone, when we see somebody do something, a lot of media people buy into a narrative. And that happens in the entertainment industry. It happens in politics. It happened in the 2000 election. You know, Al Gore was a serial exaggerator, and George Bush was the guy you wanted to have a beer with. And that was the narrative for the whole election, you know. And you see, and we saw that, I thought, in this case, and it happens especially with black males, that black males are defined in a certain way by media, by writers, and by TV people. And it's very hard to get over that narrative. It's very hard to destroy that narrative.
Well, David, you wrote one of the pieces I think got a lot of attention. But another piece that got a tremendous amount of attention was by Kansas City Star columnist Jason Whitlock, who wrote about what he called the black KKK. And he said, look, no matter what you know, what you want to say, that's most likely that an African-American pulled the trigger. That turned out to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think he made a fair point?
Well, I think it's a fair point if you say that if a black person is shot a lot, you know, most of the time a black person is the one who pulled the trigger. The statistics do bear that out. But I think that's different from what people were saying about Sean Taylor, which was because he had an incident 2 years ago, he was living a quote-unquote dangerous life that would invite this sort of thing to happen to him. And that was not what was going on in his life. He was doing the exact opposite. He was pulling back. He was trying very hard to be a family man. He was going to marry the woman that bore his child. His child was with him in the house when he died, along with his fiancée. So he was doing the exact opposite of what people were saying he was doing.
Omar, one of the things that I think has also caused a lot of pain is the fact that, as David pointed out, as you pointed out, that he was trying to do the right thing. He a lot of the fellow players have pointed out that he was not very social. He did not hang out. Mm-hmm. He was very committed to his family. And yet, the people who killed him, by all accounts, were brought into his space by family members. This is a house he lived in that and a stepsister lived in, a brother. And that the reason that these people had access to his home was that they had been invited to a party there. I just wondered, what do you think that means? I mean, is it this argument that you can never really get away from your associations, that no good deed goes unpunished? What do you think that means?
I really think it has no significance in terms of who he was or why he was targeted. I mean, Sean Taylor was targeted because he was rich. Sean Taylor was targeted because when he signed his contract, the media announced that he made a $14 million signing bonus. You know, Sean Taylor was, you know, he was prematurely defined as a bad guy. From the instance when he signed with Washington, you know, he came into camp late and people, you know, took attacks at him because he did, you know, he changed agents three times before he signed his deal. They defined him as a bad guy because of the way he played on the field, the antics that he did to intimidate opponents. I mean, he was a safety, the last line of defense. He was a hard hitter, and his intimidation is a key to his game. So he played to intimidate others. However, off the field, he couldn't have been any more different than what his on-the-field persona was. And that's what not a lot of people got to know. But what they did is they defined him as a bad guy. And when these instances where he got into legal troubles, the DUI, which the charges were dropped, when he went to retrieve his ATV vehicles from the individuals who he believed had robbed him of them, you know, he took justice into his own hands and he made a mistake. But how many 22-year-olds don't make mistakes?
I think the question, though, is the issue that a lot of these guys get to a certain level in life and don't recognize the level that they're in. I mean, if he were a 22-year-old internet mogul, would he have gone after guys with a gun who'd stolen his ATVs? No, he would have called the police. I think, are people seeing a metaphor here that these guys need to leave certain lifestyles behind? I don't know.
See, there's a little bit of difficulty in terms of looking at that situation. His father is a chief of police. All his life, and I've heard this story firsthand, all his life he'd heard that his father had cleaned up his messes. So he tried to handle that situation in a way that he thought could not involve his father cleaning up his messes. He was trying to prove that he was a man and can handle the situation. Was it a wrong decision? Absolutely. Did he learn from it? He did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was going to be defined throughout his life for that. Mm-hmm. Instance. And I just don't think it was necessarily fair, especially when, you know, he'd done everything to correct the mistake. He had stayed out of trouble, lived his life without any trouble. And the one thing that people don't understand about Sean is that he was a private hermit type guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't hanging out in the streets. Sean Taylor wasn't going to the clubs, you know, but people misunderstood him.
And since I see your point, David. Final word to you, and just briefly, if you would, your column clearly was a cry for folks to pay attention. What is it that you want people to learn from this?
Well, I want people to learn that young black males are being systematically eliminated in this country, and we have to do something about it. We can't just sit idly by and allow it to happen. We see this. It doesn't matter what city you're in. It's Detroit. It's Chicago. It's L.A. It's D.C. It's Philly. We're burying hundreds, thousands of Sean Taylors every day, every year, and we've got to address that in some kind of meaningful way so that it's part of our national discourse as much as Iraq, as much as the subprime loans, as much as anything else, that black males are being eliminated.
David Aldrich is a sports columnist with the Philadelphia Inquirer. He was kind enough to join us here in our Washington studios. Omar Kelly is a sports writer for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He joined us from our NPR bureau in Miami. You can read their commentaries at our website at npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.